legendary record executive did not like this recording. He said it was embarrassing, but the public loved it, and it soared to number one on the chart. And it won this brother-sister duo a Grammy Award for Best Rock and Roll Vocal. I'm Ronnie Allen, and I'm proud to introduce... hang on a second. Heads, it's April. Tails, it's Nino. Tails, it's Nino. Hi, Nino.
Hiya, Ronnie. How are you?
Okay. Well, you were Tails, so I have to introduce you first.
I've always been on the tail end when it comes...
Really?
That's your first.
I'm going to give you the honor, Nino, of introducing this lady. Why don't you do a proper introduction to this wonderful lady?
Of course. This is my younger sister. She's been telling everybody that for years. This is my younger sister, originally named Carol Vincentette Lotempio, who has magically somehow become in life April Stevens. And she's the wonderful vocalist, my sister, who made me sound good on record.
That is so nice. April, what have you got to say?
I think that's wonderful. I love that. Even though I'm older than Nino, but just a couple of years.
Wait a minute. You're older? And he said you're younger. Already we have a brother and sister disagreement here.
No. You have no idea what I'd go through if I said she was older.
You originally from Niagara Falls, New York?
That's right.
And according to your website, we're going to give a big shout-out to the gentleman who runs your website. His name is Jim Chaffin?
Uh-huh, Chaffin.
C-H-A-F-F-I-N?
Yes, he's wonderful. He's our little watchover. He takes care of everything, and he has been just terrific.
Website address is www.ninoandapril.com. That's ninoandapril.com.
He's been our fan and friend since Deep Purple.
Jim, thank you for making this interview possible. Okay.
Indeed. Many thanks. Over
both here. Necessary and possible. Nino, I understand that you were sitting in the audience at a Peggy Lee show, and you did something that was unusual, daring. What's the story with that?
Well, it was a Benny Goodman show, and Peggy Lee was working with his band. It was in Buffalo, New York. My folks took all of us to the show, and my mom had me all primed to walk on stage when she gave me the signal, pull on Benny Goodman's coat, and say, "Hey, my grandfather bet me $10 if I was any good, I could sing with your band," which I did. Right up on stage, I was too young to be afraid. So Benny Goodman picked me up and said, "Say that into the microphone," which I did, and the whole audience thought it was a big put-on, like I was a shill. And he said, "No, I've never seen this kid before." So he said, "What do you want to sing?" And I said, "Rosetta in the QC with a tag at the end." I was already pretty much a pro at 7 years old.
You had a lot of spunk.
I was too young to know any different.
You tore up the crowd.
Tore him up, and Benny Goodman asked me if I wouldn't come back every night for the rest of his engagement and repeat what I had done that evening, which, of course, I did.
An amazing story. And eventually, in addition to singing, you began to study the clarinet, and then at the age of 13, you changed your main focus to the saxophone.
That's true. Well, I played them both by that time.
You played them both. A year later, you debuted professionally with Horace Heidt.
Yes, sir.
And you subsequently played tenor sax with Maynard Ferguson's band, and you did that for about 6 years.
Oh, you've done your homework.
That's
very good.
Thanks to Jim there. You've done quite a bit.
Well, thank you.
Now it's time to talk a little bit about your older, younger sister, Carol.
Well?
You were Carol initially.
Carol, yes.
And you were outside of a record store somewhere in Hollywood. What happened?
I was at Music City, and I was looking for some music, and a young Italian tall fellow came up to me and said, "You look like a singer, and I need a singer. I've got a record, and I need a voice, and would you do this for me? Could I have your number, and we'll set it all up?" And I looked at him, and I thought, well, he can't be on the level. But he seemed to. He had a buddy there, and he said, "I promise that he's got a record." I said, "Well," I said, "this is my number, and you can call, but my father will answer the phone and have to be with me," which he was. And it turned out that he did have a song, and it was called No, 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 Not That. And it started me off. And he turned out most of the lights and said, now you have to make believe you're really with the, with some guy, and he wants to kiss you. And it just, it was like a little acting job, and it just worked out great.
And that was your first venture really into a recording studio.
That's right.
So that was originally on Laurel Records.
It was a very small label.
So it didn't actually make you a major star at that point.
Oh, no.
You switched to Society Records, and you recorded a few songs, one of which was called Don't Do It.
That's right. The owner of the company was Al Piantedosi. He was an ASCAP writer and had quite a few hits in those days. RCA Victor heard some of the songs that I did, and Henry Rene up there wanted me to record for him, and of course I was thrilled to be with RCA Victor.
Henry, incidentally, had a lot of hats. He was the West Coast head of artists and repertoire, sometimes called A&R Man, for RCA Records. He actually heard Don't Do It, and he thought there was an unusual quality to your voice. You did these songs in a certain way.
Yes. Don't Do It, by the way, was written by Nino. He wrote the song.
Oh, okay. Nino, I forgot to give you credit for that, so she just did. That's great. Okay. We'll move right along to I'm in Love Again, which was what you recorded with Henry Rene. That's a song, not the Fats Domino song, but it's a song written by Cole Porter.
It had always been done, from what I understand, as a fast-tempoed song. But he had an idea to do it kind of a slow, languorous kind of a thing with violins and all, and it did work out, a very haunting little melody.
You know, in those days, Ronnie,
yes,
if a guy was an orchestra leader, he'd have the band play the first half of the record.
Yes, I remember that.
And he would only allot the last half of the record to whoever the singer was.
That was the typical big band recordings.
Typical. And this particular instance, the same thing was done, but April sounded so great on the tail end, singing one chorus at the end, that she became the star and he became secondary.
We're going to listen to it right now. And by the way, this one got to number 6 on the chart. Not bad. And before I play it, I want to ask you one question. How did you become April Stevens?
Well, when I had, I think it was No, 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 Not That, I worked one night with Les Brown. I don't remember how exactly why he was in the picture, but he said to me, I'm going to give you some advice. He said that particular song is going to be banned, and your name, Carol Tempo, we had shortened Lo Tempio to Tempo, and he said, it's going to hurt your career, so make up a name for this particular song, and then you can go back to Carol Tempo. My aunt suggested April. I loved the name. I was born in April. And we needed a last name. I said, well, let me think about it. I said, well, what is your name? And he said, Stevens. And I said, well, that sounds good, April Stevens. He said, well, you've got till tomorrow. Well, the next morning he called me and said, well, we had to make up the records and you're April Stevens.
It's a good thing his name wasn't Jinglehopper.
Yeah, right.
You would have been April Jinglehopper. Right now, let's listen to that recording. Got to number 6 on the chart. This is April Stevens with I'm in Love Again.
Cuddle up blues. I'm in love.
Stevens, and I'm in love again, and that was recorded for RCA Victor Records, top 10 record. You followed up with another top 10 record called Give Me a Little Kiss, got to number 10 as well, so you did pretty good on RCA. You actually had three charted records, actually, on RCA, and this was the early 50s, we're talking 1951, which means that that was 12 years before something called Deep Purple came along.
That's right.
You, in a sense, as a record star, you kind of had the jump on your brother.
Well, a little bit.
Just a little bit. Now, Nino, we don't want to neglect you. I want to give the two of you equal time this evening, so I'm going to do the best I can. You were in a motion picture called The Glenn Miller Story. What role did you play?
Well, wouldn't you guess that I played historically the role of Benny Goodman. They couldn't use Benny Goodman's name in the movie because he wouldn't give them permission, but that was the part he played in life when the young clarinet player joined Ben Pollock's band. Okay. That's the part I played, but in the film we had to use the name of a later Glenn Miller musician called Willie Schwartz. And so they called me Willie Schwartz, but historically speaking, it should have been Benny Goodman.
So you were in that movie. In 1959, you were in a movie called Operation Petticoat.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, I was.
And you met some famous movie star.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to make friends with Cary Grant. He was such a nice man. The very first night they were having dinner in some sort of a little Quonset hut type of place set up for the crew and the cast, and we had all started eating. And all of a sudden, in walks Cary Grant, dressed in a khaki naval officer's uniform, looking about as handsome as anything you've ever seen in life. The whole place just stopped eating and stared at this man as he walked in. And he was so congenial and so nice, I can't say enough nice things about him.
You became lifelong friends.
Lifelong friends for over 30 years, yeah.
That's fantastic. I'm Ronnie Allen, and it is such a delight to be talking with Nino Tempo and April Stevens, and as I announce you throughout the show, I will alternate who I say first to give you kind of, you know, equal time. And I want to point out that this is, I believe, the first radio interview that you have done in the 21st century.
Absolutely.
We're going to move right along now to 1959. Actually, we were in 1959 for the Petticoat film. In 1959, somewhere, one night or one day, you got the idea to write a song called Teach Me Tiger. What was the inspiration for that, need I ask?
Oh, that was April's initial thought. She came up and said, I've got an idea for a song. What do you think of this? She started singing, Teach Me Tommy How to Kiss You. She said, then we'll put something in there like, wah, 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 wah. Teach Me Tommy How to Kiss You. Something in there, wah, 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 wah. I said, no. I said, you make wah, 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 wah part of the song. And I said, forget Tommy. There aren't enough Tommies out there. But call him Tiger. Every man is a tiger. So we finished the song, and you've got it.
Yeah, we certainly have it here. April, do you have anything you want to say before I play it?
No. The funny part is, I don't remember going up to him with that line. I remember the wah-wah-wahs, but I don't remember saying, I've got an idea for a song. I thought you came up with the name.
No, It was your idea.
Okay.
Your basic idea, and I finished it off.
Ding. Round one. Ding.
You sure did.
What was the recording session like? Did they put the lights out like they did with the other recording session?
Oh,
no.
Go ahead, Carol. You said it.
Nino thought that there was another take that wasn't quite so sexy that would allow it to be played on the air.
Henry Rene
liked this, and therefore it never was played.
Right. You going to say something, Nino?
Yeah. What had happened is we both had experience with her records being banned. It had become like commonplace. And I was only, I was in my teens at the time, but I think I knew more then about what was popular than now. Anyhow, when she did this wonderful take, as I remember, I said to her, oh, that's great. It's got just enough oomph. But not too much. You won't be banned with this one.
Right. So what happened?
Henry said, April, that's great, but could you try one more and give it a little more oomph? And I said, don't do it. Don't listen to him. You'll be banned. So April didn't know how to get out of it. She said, well, I'll just try one.
So she did another one, and she added more to it, and that's the one they released?
That's what the one you're hearing. And it was banned, sure enough. Yeah, and they took it off. But I really feel Teach Me Tiger would have been a very big hit.
We're going to listen to it right now, and one listen is worth 1,000 words. This is April Stevens and Teach Me Tiger.
Hi, Tiger. Teach me, Tiger, how to kiss you. Wow, 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 wow. Show me.
Teach Me Tiger, April Stevens. That recording was on Imperial Records, never became a huge hit, simply because of the lack of airplay, but it has developed a cult status over the years. People all over the world know about the record. There's a story involving the space shuttle, Challenger, which was in 1983. This is years before we know what happened to the Challenger. But tell me about the story with the astronauts making a certain request.
Well, that was probably one of the greatest thrills I've ever had. I was told that the space shuttle Challenger, the men wanted to be awakened by Teach Me Tiger. And I couldn't believe it. I thought of all the songs in the world, and I knew that some others had asked for Barbara Streisand, and there were a few, but they were really big-name singers, so I just flipped out, and I happened to be watching TV, and I happened to see the picture of the spaceship in space, and in the background I could hear Teach Me Tiger, and that just knocked me out. And I was fortunate enough to be at their landing. Wow. And I did get to meet Story Musgrave. He came to our house and lunch with us one afternoon. He was one of the astronauts. And they gave me a picture and said, with admiration and many thanks for the out-of-this-world wake-up. And it's just been great for me.
Story Musgrave Tiger.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Also, according to your website, this was recently used as the theme for a bread commercial in Germany.
Yes, a bread commercial.
Now, is it your recording of it was?
Always her recording.
How could they make a bread commercial out of Teach Me Tiger? I'm trying to envision.
I don't know. I don't care.
What is that?
They made it.
You never saw the commercial?
No.
Okay.
But you know, Ronnie, they made a beer commercial, a vitamin commercial,
yeah,
a cat food commercial.
All over Teach Me Tiger?
Oh. Yeah, it's been used, licensed all over the world by all kinds of companies about 7, 8, 9 times.
I think it's fair to say, April, that even though I'm in Love Again was your biggest solo record, getting to number 6 on the chart, in actuality, Teach Me Tiger is far more popular.
Absolutely, absolutely, no doubt about it. And it keeps popping up. It just won't lie down, and that's wonderful.
Moving to the 60s, you, Nino, became a successful session musician, and you did some recording sessions with Bobby Darin. Those of you who listened to You Must Have Been a Beautiful Baby and Irresistible You can hear the wonderful saxophone playing of Nino Tempo. As a result of your session work with Bobby, who was on Atco Records, I would assume that probably led to you and April getting a recording contract with that label.
Exactly right. On one of the sessions, we took a break, and I asked Bobby if I could please show him one of my songs. So we both sat at the piano, and I started playing and singing a song I had written. And before I was halfway through, Bobby knew the song, knew the melody, was harmonizing with me, and we finished singing it together. He said, yeah, please send that to me. And he gave me an address. When he walked away, Ahmet Erdogan, who was one of the main founders of Atlantic Records, came up to me while I was at the piano and said, hey, man, I know you play saxophone and all, but you do other things. What else do you do? And I said, I'm starting an act with my sister, April Stevens. He said, oh, I know all about her. I've heard of her. He said, yeah, I said, I'd like to hear you sing. So I invited him over to our parents' house for a spaghetti dinner and to hear us sing. Well, we spent more time at the table eating my mom's Italian food than we'd been singing. And finally, at the end, he said, okay, let me hear you sing something. So we sang about 8 bars of I've Been Carrying a Torch for You So Long, I Burned a Great Big Hole in My Heart. And he said, oh, that's terrific. I love your sound. Okay, I'm going to sign you.
From that song?
Yeah, from that song.
Oh, boy. We're going to mention that song in a couple of moments. But first, we're going to mention your first hit record on Atco Records. And the billing was April Stevens and Nino Tempo. You did the old standard, Sweet and Lovely.
We were hunting around for original songs to do, but time was running out, and Ahmet hadn't brought anything with him. He looked for songs, but the really great songwriters of the day would give the really great songs to the really big stars.
Right.
They'd give out the other stuff to everybody else. So I said, gee, Bobby had a hit with You Must Have Been a Beautiful Baby and all those things. I said, let me try an old standard. I always loved Sweet and Lovely, so I started working out an arrangement at the piano, and the record you've got is the arrangement.
Sweet and lovely, sweeter than the roses in May. And she loves me, there's nothing more I can say. Skies above me never were as blue as her eyes. Oh, 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 oh. And she loves me, who would want a sweeter surprise? There's a thrill I can't express. In my heart, a song of love is haunting me. Memories haunting me. Sleep, sweet and perfect.
That was Sweet and Lovely, April Stevens, and Nino Tempo. I'm Ronnie Allen, and I'm talking to Nino Tempo and April Stevens. There you go. I said I'm going to do equal time in terms of who goes first and who goes second. Well, Sweet and Lovely was really kind of a coming attraction for something huge that was to follow. You had been in a recording session. You did a song called Paradise. And the feeling was that Paradise was going to do really well on the chart. You had a lot of faith in that particular song. But as part of that recording session, you also did something called Deep Purple. And just backtracking a little bit, there's something very special about Deep Purple. Of course, I'm referring, Nino, to your harmonica playing.
Right.
Yeah, sure. Sure I am. My nose is growing here. And there's something else that's kind of special. Very distinctive. April reciting the words. I understand that she did that because you couldn't remember them.
Initially, I didn't know them. We were auditioning the song for a friend of ours who lived around the block. I always envisioned Deep Purple as being slightly from a comical angle because I played all the wrong chords in it. And I thought everybody in the business would just get a great laugh out of it. And so we put it together, and I said, I can't sing this song, April. It was her idea to do Deep Purple, but I said, I can't sing it. I can't sing that high. So I started using my falsetto, and we put this thing together we thought was so funny, and we invited our little friend, Vicky Baskoy, to hear us do it. And when we finished it, on the second chorus, I didn't know the words, so April was saying, When the Deep Purple Falls. And then I was saying, When the Deep... You know, just so I could get through the kind of like audition. But when we finished, Vicky had tears in her eyes. She said, oh, I love that. Especially the way April speaks the words before you sing them. And we looked at each other, dumbfounded. Maybe we backed into something.
April, is that exactly the way it happened? I want to make
quite.
Sure.
I had to do a little convincing. He wasn't sure about
so
that.
So Nino is telling the gospel truth there. That's the way it really started.
That's it.
And Vicky liked it so much that you decided that when you recorded it, you were going to use the feeding the lyrics to Nino.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Even if he eventually learned the lyrics, you're going to do it anyway.
Oh, absolutely, because when she said that, something inside of me said, that's right. I it just felt right to me when she said it. I don't know that I would have even thought of it.
April's timing was so perfect because she had to just speak the words loud enough and just maybe 1 second before I was supposed to sing them. Her timing had to be right on the nose.
You recorded the voice tracks with probably 15 minutes left in the session.
14.
I'm sorry, 14. I gave you too much time there.
That's right.
And when Ahmet Erdogan heard the record, his reaction was that it was embarrassing, it was...
Worst record you've made so far.
The worst record you've made so far.
Unreleasable.
He didn't want to put it out. He was, he put out Paradise.
That's right.
Which bubbled under as low as you could bubble under, just about 126.
Yeah, then we bubbled under.
You really bubbled under with that one. And when Phil Spector got interested in possibly releasing Deep Purple, Ahmet decided, well, what the heck, we'll give you one more shot, we'll release Deep Purple, and if this does not work, then we'll just kind of break your contract, right? I mean, pretty much.
Oh.
All right. So Deep Purple got released. This is the recording that the record executive, Ahmet Ertegun...
Don't forget Jerry Wexler.
Oh, Jerry didn't like it either?
No, Jerry didn't like it either.
Okay. The record executive, Ahmet Ertegun, didn't like it. Jerry Wexler seconded the motion. The only thing is, the public loved it. It made it to number one on the chart. Ladies and gentlemen, Nino Tempo and April Stevens, Deep Purple. Notice I said Nino Tempo and April Stevens. On Sweet and Lovely, it was April Stevens and Nino Tempo.
That's
and
true.
On Deep Purple, it was Nino Tempo and April Stevens.
I said to April, why don't we just flip it around? Maybe it'll bring us luck.
And it did. And it did. So from then on, it was Nino and April. The interesting thing about Deep Purple is, apart from what I've already mentioned, you won a Grammy Award for that one.
That's right.
Boy, isn't that amazing?
Now, what was the category?
The best rock and roll record of the year.
Were you a rock and roll act?
Apparently we were.
Apparently.
Well, I guess they
right.
thought you were.
It was light rock and roll, but it was, you see, there weren't that many categories then.
And that was the year before they televised it. They didn't televise it then. We were at the year.
The next year they started televising.
Oh, gee.
What a bad break.
The flip side of Deep Purple, which I'm actually not going to play on the show, but I want to mention, you mentioned the title earlier. It was, what is it, April?
I've been carrying a torch for you so long that I burned a great big hole in my heart.
That has an interesting distinction, the longest title to be the flip side of a number one hit.
That's true.
The follow-up record to Deep Purple was your recording of another standard, one that was called Whispering. And you decided, I guess, to keep in the gimmick. Can we call it a gimmick? Is it fair to say that it was a gimmick, her feeding you the lyrics?
After the first one, it was a gimmick, yeah.
Okay.
We kept it in too much.
Even though Nino probably knew the lyrics to Whispering, you kept it in anyway.
Oh, yeah. The way we thought of Whispering, we were sitting on a plane leaving Seattle on a red eye. We had just done a concert with Stevie Wonder. While they're warming the engines and they had the Muzak coming over the PA systems in those days, April said to me, do you have any idea about what we're going to follow up with? And I said, I don't have a clue. And then she said, well, how about the song that they're playing right now? Which was Whispering.
Wow.
Over the Muzak.
Over the Muzak. And you just said, that's the one we'll do.
And yeah, and I said, let me think about it.
And looked at me and said, that is a great idea.
That was Whispering, got to lucky number 11 on the chart. Lucky number 11 is okay. Unlucky number 10 would have been better, but I think that the British invasion probably had something to do with it not making the top 10. The time.
From our lips to God's ears, I'll tell you. It absolutely was.
Because the airplay just kind of stopped on it, or it definitely diminished, because what did radio stations play? British acts?
The Atlantic executive approached me one day and said, Nino, yesterday we sold 30,000 copies of Whispering. Today, nothing. And then the next day, nothing. The next day, nothing, nothing, nothing.
Well,
never sold another record. The British invasion had hit.
Well, eventually you did a recording where April did not feed you the lyrics. And I'm talking about a song called Tea for Two.
We all realized that we should have the vocal group doing something to fill in. You for me and me for you was a little bit bland. So Ahmed came up with the idea. He says, hey, man, why don't we do this? He said, you know, down in this South American country, which I don't remember, he said, what their name for what marijuana is Tinana. He says, why don't you sing, have the girl sing, Janko, hey, Janko, Tinana, Tinana, Janko, hey, Janko. God, how great. Nobody will know what that is. Which is exactly what we put on the record.
And nobody knew what it was.
And nobody to this day except you.
Baby, pray.
I didn't know that that was
you what didn't?
It meant.
You mean we just revealed to the entire world? Tea for Two by Nino Tempo and April Stevens, Tinan.
Janko hey Janko, Tinana Tinana.
Thank you. Eventually, you decided you had to do some different things. One of the different things that you did was a song called I Love How You Love Me. A few weeks ago, I interviewed the two surviving Paris sisters, Albeth and Cheryl. And, of course, Priscilla passed away a few years ago, and she's the lead singer on the original hit record of I Love How You Love Me. When you did the song, though, Nino, you did something very, very different, and this is the number one Nino and April video on YouTube.
I Love How You Love Me. I wanted to take the tempo faster, and I thought, what could I do that's different and has never been done? And at that moment, I was listening to an old Birds record, and the way all the guitars were kind of like little needles and snakes, you know, squirming around one another, I thought, wait a minute, that reminds me of a bagpipes. So why not have a bagpipe player come in and play in the background? And so I hired a bagpipe player. But he didn't know music. He could only play one lick over and over again. So we had him play, then we sent him home. And instead of him playing to our music track, we had to time our track to his bagpipe playing. It's kind of backwards, coming in the back door. But after many hours, we got it.
Whenever you kiss me, and when I'm away from you, I love how you miss me. I love the way you always treat me tenderly. But baby, most of all, I love how you love me.
Imitation is not necessarily the sincerest form of flattery, as you found out. What exactly happened?
Well, it came out, and everyone thought it would be a very, very important record, and frankly, it wasn't. And about 3-4 months later, we heard that a group in England called the Ryan Twins copied our record so closely that I had trouble telling them from us. But they put their record out, and it became number uno in England. They copied it, and I, you know, you can't help but ask yourself, why not us? We had the first.
Did you feel flattered at all, or just mad?
No, I was not flattered.
You were not a happy camper.
We were mad.
April gets mad? Does April ever get mad?
Yeah, sometimes.
Kind of, yeah.
She's much more stubborn than I am.
I just can't imagine April getting mad.
Oh, yeah, she could be Nails Nathan, I'll tell you.
Oh, God. Ronnie, don't believe him.
Okay, moving right along. You came out with something that was totally different. For a different record label, it was for White Whale Records, and you did kind of your impression of, at least musically, it sounded to me like your impression of the Righteous Brothers on a song called All Strung Out.
Well, I wrote it for the Righteous Brothers. They had decided they didn't want to do any more formula songs. So we were going to make a demo and present it around. Then I said, well, wait a minute, why don't we just go and try it? I said, I'm not sure whether we can pull it off, but we can try it. We can give it a shot. So we did. And it really seemed to come off. And we had a problem in the studio because the studio was not very sophisticated and we were flying everything in, and the mixing job at the end was going to be an absolute bear. But I got Bones Howe one night in the studio at midnight. He said, okay, Nino, I finally got a couple hours. So he took a few hours and made that record into the best-sounding record I think we probably ever made in its own style. He just pulled it all together.
I just can't get enough of you, baby. There just ain't enough of you to go around. Just when I'm needing you, baby, you ain't nowhere to be found.
Out by Nino Tempo and April Stevens. Interesting thing about that recording, Nino, it actually got to in the 30s on the chart, which was not bad, but it should have gotten higher in terms of how much it sold.
Every town that we were traveling to with the Righteous Brothers, we were number one, two, or three. As a matter of fact, we thought we were going to have an absolute smash, and we didn't. The major markets like New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, Miami wouldn't play the record. They just wouldn't get on it for some reason, couldn't get them. And the only markets that played it were secondary markets. As a matter of fact, many years later, Rush Limbaugh said on his show that his favorite record when he was in college was All Strung Out, but he had worn it out, and he asked his radio audience if anybody had a nice clean copy to send it to him. So I sent him a copy, and we talked later, and he said, I thought it was number one in the country. It was number one in my college town.
All right, now let's go to Sister James.
Sister James was written by Jeff Berry and me. When we finished it, I looked at him and I said, there's only one question. Who is Sister James? We sang Don't Play No Games on Sister James because it sounded good. But
right.
We didn't know what Sister James meant and who it was. So
well,
we put it out anyway. I said, is it your sister or is it maybe a nun? And it turned out the audience got their own idea of what it meant and bought it.
What instruments are you playing on this one?
And a saxophone.
The billing was Nino Tempo.
And Fifth Avenue Sax.
How'd you come up with Fifth Avenue Sax?
We had a manager one time that said, you know, I got a great name if you ever want to become an instrumentalist. Instead of Sax Fifth Avenue, turn it around. And incidentally, in the middle of Sister James, you'll hear a weird instrument. Sounds kind of like a guitar, fuzz tone.
Right.
But it was a saxophone. Something went wrong with the amp. And we tried to duplicate it the next time we recorded with the same amp. Same equipment, same horn, same guy. Couldn't get it.
But where in Sister James are we going to hear the busted amp?
About halfway.
Is it very obvious?
Oh, yeah. It's at the end of a bridge.
Okay.
Something goes real high like a screeching guitar, but it's saxophone.
All right.
Going through this busted amplifier.
Tempo and Fifth Avenue Sax and Sister James. Great saxophone, great playing, lousy amplifier.
Yeah, that's it.
Nino and April, this has been such a joy for me. Talking to you, and prior to that, talking to Jim and visiting your website. We hope everybody visits the website, www.ninoandapril.com. Also visit the great YouTube videos, and there are several of them out there. You don't do too many of these interviews, so I feel really honored that you said yes to this one.
It was great fun, Ronnie, really. And like Nino said, you know how to interview. The time just flew by.
And you have great energy in your voice, Ronnie. Great enthusiasm. That's genuine. You can't miss it.
Thank you so much. We're going to close with the song that you did at an event very recently that was very special to you. Nino, what's the story with that?
Mike Stoller and Jerry Lieber were being honored for their lifetime achievements, and Mike asked me to come to New York where the event was going to be held, and that was at Carnegie Hall. And of course, I was very excited about going, but little did I know that there's great magic in Carnegie Hall. Just walking inside and realizing George Gershwin, Benny Goodman, Pavarotti, all those kind of artists entertained there. And little did I know that I was going to be backed up as a soloist by the New York Pops Orchestra. So here I am, Mrs. Lo Tempio, the little boy, with his saxophone, backed up by the New York Pops Symphony at Carnegie Hall, playing all alone out there. And not only did the audience give me a great round of applause, but on walking off, the entire orchestra, including the conductor, were applauding me. This event was probably the defining moment in my musical life.
This is Nino Tempo, the song written by Mike Stoller, Amazon Moon. The show. I want to thank Nino Tempo and April Stevens for allowing me to be the first disc jockey to interview them on the radio in the 21st century.
Here's a couple of bonus tracks.
First off, the flip side of Deep Purple. This one is called I've Been Carrying a Torch for You So Long That I Burned a Great Big Hole in My Heart.
I've been carrying a torch for you so long that I burned a great big hole in my heart. I've been carrying a torch for you so long, ever since the day you said, baby, we must part. I've been carrying this feeling deep inside. Never thought that you'd upset my apple. I've been carrying a torch for you so long that I burned a great big hole in my heart. Silly fool with them honey lips, you broke me up in little bits. Ooh, true love you'll never know. And I curse myself, cause I still love you. But I know someday you want me back again. That's the day you'll realize you're not so smart. You'll start carrying a torch for me, and then you're gonna burn a great big hole in your heart. Now you broke me up with little bits. Ooh, true love, you'll never know. And I curse myself, cause I still love you. But I know someday you want me back again. That's the day you realize you're not so smart. You'll start carrying a torch for me, and then you're gonna burn a great big hole in your heart.
And finally, I want to dedicate this bonus track to Jim Chaffin, who maintains the Nino Tempo and April Stevens website. If it weren't for Jim, I wouldn't even be aware that this one exists. So Jim, this one is for you. Nino Tempo and April Stevens, Baby Weemus.